Are you ready for this?
Welcome back, Pod Blasters! First up, England hit India like a dog in the face. Cricket and politics goes together like an egg in an egg roll. And we're in cricket heaven. Let's hit it!
Wow, exciting as always.
Oh, very exciting. Really pumped.
So much to talk about. Two inconsequential games for England against India.
What the warm-ups?
Yeah. Two out of three done. We've got the stats to share with the listeners.
Yes. And what did they tell us? What did they tell us about that possible England team that are going to be turning out in the first test against India?
So much to discuss. Also coming up on this episode, cricketers in politics. A particularly Asian feel to this one for our Asian listener.
Oh, that's
so he'll
good.
Be pleased.
He'll love it. Which one? Is that ants with four Zs, do you think?
Yeah, ants.
Could
triple
be.
Z.
We don't know. We don't know his nationality.
Doesn't matter to us.
Oh, it's all a level playing field on the Podblast.
You know what? I'm eyeing a good episode, Ross, and takes me to the very first thing I want to discuss today.
I think it
might be a pet peeve.
Pet peeves.
Yeah, might as well. And basically, it's lazy sports journalism.
Yeah.
Episodes ago, listeners, Ross talked about a particularly nasty piece of journalism to do with the Holocaust.
Oh, yeah,
and England
terrible.
Footballers' reactions to it.
Yep.
And this one is nowhere near as serious because it doesn't involve the Holocaust. But it's still pretty serious to me. I'm sick and tired of this, Ross. It's a pet peeve. Headlines, BBC News website, Metro, Trot Eyes England Win.
Yeah, what are they? Can they use a different word than eyes?
Just a different verb. The verb to eye.
Oh, it's weak.
It is weak. And it's always something which, of course, they're thinking.
Yeah.
Rooney eyes World Cup victory.
Yeah. What could they use instead? He's thinking about it. He's just looking at it.
Yeah, yeah. On Saturday, Arsene Wenger believes his team can beat Norwich.
Yeah. That's just eyes victory against Norwich.
Wenger eyes Norwich victory.
It's non-story. It's like man looks at thing, bombshell.
Yeah. I mean, and also, it's got a very slight twist to it because of the thing eyes up. You know, have you been eyeing up my bird?
Yeah.
So I do think that there's something almost a little bit sort of provocatively sexual about it.
Yeah.
So it's you know, Wenger eyes up Norwich.
Yeah, or
so,
Wenger.
Well, don't do that. Don't do that, Wenger.
Yeah, oh, come on, give it a rest, Wenger.
Don't objectivise Norwich.
I like Ferguson is tracking a new player from Portugal. Like he's licking his fingers, putting his hands in the air and touching the ground and sniffing around for the scent of Nanny.
He's trying to work out whether Nanny's stud prints are fresh or a few days old.
Prints are fresh.
He can tell because sometimes, just on the edge where the stud has hit the ground, it's knocked up the dirt. And if there's a film of dust over it, it's maybe a few days old. But if there's no film of dust on the stud mark where it's disturbed the ground in the middle of the forest,
it's fresh.
He knows Nanny's been there recently.
Oh, and he's close.
And then he knows he's close to Nanny.
That's very. There's lots of other awful ones. And it's such a shorthand, isn't it? It's a really easy way of saying this is a thing.
Yeah.
It's not, and it doesn't tell you anything.
And then at the end of the damn article, and this is particularly prevalent among England cricketers, it's, you know, Stuart Broad gave this interview on behalf of Maxi Muscle.
Oh, yeah. Oh, all that stuff.
Well, Stuart Broad told me that he was eyeing victory against India on behalf of Maxi Muscle.
I think they should just take it all out and just cut to the chase. So, like, Broad, India, cricket match, Maxi Muscle. Just leave it at that. Because all the others is superlative stuff that's been, you know, the height of postmodernism, that would be. Because everything else is just conjunctives. And they mean nothing. I've read them a million times before. And they're all for this. They have no colour. They're for the same thing. They're all just, they're put in a random order.
It reminds me of the character Yusarian in Catch 22, who has to censor the letters going out of the camp during the Second World War. Mm. And he gets really bored censoring them. So he just takes out all the as or all the thes. Or all the prepositions.
Yeah.
Just censors that out. Let's just get rid of all the as and the thes and just have Broad, cricket, India, Maxi Muscle.
I'll just have a picture of, we don't even need to know, you know, it's a Ferguson eyes. We don't need to, we just have a picture of a player, Manu, you know, Leventerson, who's a, you know, Polish guy, 3 million question mark next to it.
Yeah. That it's a little bit, I mean, to be frank, that's pretty much an accurate description of the current Observer Sport on Sunday section. I don't know whether you followed it recently. I think there have been cuts at The Guardian, The Observer, because it all seems to be written by one man, and it's only about 3 pages long. So maybe they would do better with just a picture of Broad, a picture of a cricket ball, and a picture of some maxi muscle.
Yeah, I think that would do, that's just fine, isn't it?
The Observer Sunday Sport Monthly.
That's right. Sports journalism is lowering the standard just of writing, and I think it's time it disassociated itself from literature.
There are exceptions to that, of course.
Okay.
I mean, what you're talking about is the avant-garde of sports journalism. You are just breaking it down more and more.
Yeah.
Saying everything about nothing, or maybe nothing about everything.
God, that's deep.
Anyway, that's my pet peeve for the week. Let's talk about cricket. Well, that was enjoyable, wasn't
it?
It's beautiful. The cricket music.
Is it?
That's actually...
music for cricket.
There's an international language of love. There's also international music of cricket.
That is cricket.
In case you didn't recognise it. You're supposed to be able to recognise it. You're supposed to be able to recognise the international language of love, so surely...
Yeah, if Sir Alex Ferguson heard that, he'd go, cricket's close. That's what he'd say. If he was tracking cricket.
On the air. All right, let's have a look at some of the stats. The second game, the warm-up game against Mumbai A's, just finished. I didn't watch any of the game. I've only read the write-ups. I've been told on good authority, and that good authority is Nick Compton is actually playing in the match, that basically they were playing part-time spinners who wouldn't be even professional level spinners. So both matches are drawn. First question for you, Ross. What is the point of a 3-day, 2-innings-apiece warm-up match in subcontinental conditions?
Well, here's one. Excitement. People do tend to score quite quickly. I mean, typically India scored about 4 and over.
In the first game,
India A, and I thought that was quite exciting. It does give you a vision of what if they just really got to move on a bit more in cricket and in the long form of the game. It might be quite interesting.
The answer to that is pretty easy. There'd be loads of draws.
Or would people just have to alter their style a little bit?
They were nowhere near a result, neither of these. Just all it would have taken is 2 days more of the tour.
Yeah.
Just 2 4-day games instead of
proper games.
2 3-day games. Or 3 days more for the 3 warm-up games.
Why do they do the 3-day? I don't know what the thinking is behind it.
I mean, my personal preference would be for them to go back to the days where they boarded a boat, sailed there over the course of 2 months, played a selection of local sides around the place and a selection of expat sides, and then played something in the region of a 12 to 14 game series against the locals.
How long does that take? Like a year?
Yeah, just head off for a year.
I'd
say goodbye
that.
To family.
Yeah, see you later.
Trot off.
Kids. Trots off.
Yeah. Oh, still got it. Okay, let's start with India A versus England. Match was drawn. First innings, 369 for India A. Bresnan in the wickets. Economy rate of 2.95. Took 3 for 59. What have you got to say about Bresnan in the first test? And let's lead into the bowling lineup.
Well, Bresnan, I think, is going to play, it looks like to me, because of the injuries to Finn, and it looks like Stuart Broad. It doesn't look like they've got one more. I didn't realise they had one more.
They've got one more. They are going up to the same venue as the first test for the final warm-up game. The final warm-up team will not be as weak as Mumbai A. Bresnan, you say that. I think Broad's going to be back from injury for the first test.
He could well be. I just think Bresnan's been almost the standout performer. He's taken good wickets. He's bowled at a decent economy rate. And he also got 33
not out. He did. Yeah. He ties the bottom of the runs together, which is what he's supposed to do, in all fairness to him. I like the balance in the middle there of Patel prior Bresnan. Patel... with 104, you're a fan.
Oh, I'm a real fan of Patel. He's in great form. I think he's looking good. He solidified that opinion that perhaps he's one of our better players of spin. And coming at number six, where the spinners will be on, even in the first innings, they'll be sort of well winding through their overs. He's a good man to have because I think he's going to have a good series. I do believe that.
You surprised by the fact that Patel batted lower than prior in Sri Lanka and that position has now been changed?
I think the one thing that those matches did in the 2020 World Cup was actually convince people finally that Patel is a batsman.
So he should have played six back in Sri Lanka?
I think maybe he could have done. I mean, to be honest, they're pretty similar. They've both got great records at county level. They're both well-respected batsmen. Prior, a bit more attacking, but I think they're good. I mean, it's interchangeable. It doesn't bother me wildly which one goes in before the other one.
All right, so Bresnan's there in the attack. Swan's got to be there in the attack. Mm. He did well in that game. Mm. So you're saying Patel's going to be picked as well?
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's going to be the so-called all-rounder figure. Mm. All right, so apart from Bresnan and Swan, who are your other two bowlers, assuming they're going to be two more?
Yeah, I think it's looking increasingly likely like it's going to be Bresnan and Anderson, who's, you know, he's the leader of our attack. I can't imagine a team without him in it, certainly a bowling lineup, particularly in the longer form of the game.
Okay.
He will play, I'm pretty sure Swan will play, Bresnan will play, and then the final spot, I think, will be Onions.
That is a call. Let's have a look at Onions' figures in the last game before we get too excited. He took 2 for 57 off 16. Mm. What is it about that performance that makes you think he's a shoo-in for the first test?
Oh, well, the lack of other options. I don't think Broad will be back. I don't think they'll take that.
You think
that.
Broad's that badly injured?
Yeah, I don't think they'll take a chance on him, to be honest. They could do, and if they do, it really would be a toss-up between Onions and Bresnan, who plays. Again, it would probably be Bresnan. They just seem to sort of take to him a little more. I just think Onions is one of those stay-at-it bowlers, and I think might just cause a few more problems than Bresnan. Bresnan does slightly stink if one of those bowlers will get whacked around in India, although warm-up matches, he fared pretty well and looked like he might be coming back from that injury that he had a while ago. I just got a feeling that Broad won't make it. If he does, I think probably Bresnan will play. If he does make it, Bresnan will play with him. But I believe it should be Onions.
You're an iconoclast, Ross. It's what I've always liked about you. People say, why do you like Ross?
Yeah.
I say he's an iconoclast.
Yeah, well, I am, yeah.
And so you'll maybe appreciate this line of thinking.
Right.
In a couple of warm-up games where Morgan's hit some runs, Bairstow's hit a century, Patel's got a century, Compton's now got a half century. What? And Bell's going home for the second test. Why bother playing Bell in the first test?
Well, that's a really good point. Actually, it had sort of almost slipped my mind. I mean, I thought about that a while ago, but God, I forgot that Bell's
He scored five against India A.
Well, do you know what? I'll go with that. I would drop Bell. I would think that he's a great option to come back for the third test, but I'd probably say, go on, go home early. You're not in great nick. Bairstow is. I mean, Morgan's a great player, but I would just hate to see him play, to be honest.
In all fairness to Bell, 28 off 42, not out in the second innings of the second test. He can still turn it around. But, I mean, that is a game, and this goes back to Compton, about the weight that you give to the runs that he finally scored, which is, you know, those were part-time spin bowlers chucking it up on the last day with absolutely no pressure of a result.
Well, I think we've got to say that Compton is the next man in. He's got that with him. We should at least give him that chance, because it seems like they've picked him to do that. He was the batsman of the year with an average of over 99. We might have mentioned, if anyone hadn't heard it, he scored 64 not out, and it took him a bloody long while to do it.
It took him 3 hours. 162 balls.
But he did. That's what he needed to do. He had a few warm up matches. He had to make at least a 50 in one of them, just to convince them that this boy can play. And he's done that. You know, no matter what the bowling attack's like, that's what he had to do. And I can see him opening. I think that's what will happen.
Is Cook, Compton, Trott the most boring 1-2-3 in international test cricket?
It may prove to be, but it also might be one of the most stubborn. And then we do have, you know, that it's there it gets exciting. I think Patel, I think his 100 was fairly brisk. He seems to
clip on. We've been skipping around someone else.
Well, Peterson, of course.
Peterson.
He'll be in, you know, no doubt about it. I mean, unless you think he won't be in.
No, he'll be picked. There's no point of going through all of the rigmarole they've gone through just to take him to India and not pick him. Unless Andy Flower's really got it in for him. I mean, that would be an extraordinary statement.
It would. But you're right. I mean, I was thinking that we'd be looking at Patel 6, Bell 5 coming after KP, Pryor 7 with no place for Johnny Bairstow. But it is quite possible, given that he scored 100 in that warm-up match and in the last games he looked really good too, that it would be a great option to drop Bell. Not that I think it should be the end of Bell by any means, but if we're in that tricky situation where someone's got to go, it might be the sensible decision to make.
Final word on this topic, Ross, and this is to do with particularly a turning pitch. Where's Panesar in your plans?
Well, it depends how big a turn is these pitch are going to be. You know, it could be a really nice option given that we've lost Finn and Broad, who feel more like bankers than Bresnan and Onions, to pick Panesar in this game. If it looks like a real burner, if it's going to move sideways off the pitch, then God, I think Panesar's a great choice. He seems to have bowled pretty well in the warm-ups.
Do you drop Patel for that?
No, I think you'd play three spinners. I mean, it's not something England would usually do. And Patel and Panesar might be a little similar, both being left-arm spinners. Generally, we like to come round the wicket to the right-handed batsman. But, you know, it might well be worth doing. If they're real spinners, then these wickets, then maybe it's worth playing three of them.
OK, let's step back and let's look at this closely, but objectively.
Mm.
Your prediction, Ross, for the series. How are England going to do?
This is a really tough one to call, both in terms of disruption we've had. I'm talking about disruption to Bell. He's going to go home. And KP, he's only just been reintegrated back into the side. We don't know what England's form and morale is like after a pretty crappy World 2020 tournament. And we're always surprised by them on the subcontinent. They're usually either bad or really, really bad. But there is always the possibility of them being good. And, you know...
Is it a live possibility?
It could be. What test? Is it four test series?
Yeah, it is.
I would say at one all.
Like the First World War, it'll be over by Christmas.
Yes, that's true. And then New Zealand after Christmas, is
well,
that right?
One day series against India, first up.
Ooh.
Back in January, they fly back and then off to New Zealand. You know what? I'm a little bit more confident than you with all the caveats that you've said. I look at that Indian bowling attack and I cannot comprehend how England are going to lose this series. I don't know if they're necessarily going to win it, but over four games, for England to lose to a bowling attack, which has got Zahir Khan and, you know, has got Ashwin, who I'm still not sure is anything other than a one day in 2020 bowler. He's a Nareen to me. I know he did well and got all those wickets against New Zealand, but I look at him and I think you're not an international standard spinner, and I know I'm going to regret those words. And then, you know, you've got Sharma again, and, you know, he was toothless in England. I can't see where they're going to get the wickets, save for England's absolutely unmatched ability, and they're global champions at this, to completely implode in the face of mediocre spin.
Yeah, that's true. You can just see Yuvraj, and he's been called back into the test side.
Awful,
side.
Yeah.
Could really sort of pie chuck. I mean, again, I've
when
rallied
I say it's
against
awful,
that.
It's awful from England's perspective because it's going to hurt all the more. I'm delighted Yuvraj is back in. What a recovery.
Yeah, great player.
Really great player to watch. Love that stuff, and well done to him on overcoming cancer. Yeah. But we don't say enough well dones to people for overcoming cancer.
Yuvraj,
well
done on overcoming cancer.
From us. Obviously, you've overcome cancer and that'll mean something to you and to your family. But I imagine the cherry on the cake...
I haven't overcome cancer.
You haven't? No. No, that's true. What I mean is Yuvraj, probably this is the cherry on the cake of everything. He knows that
we've got... Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. He'll be going, oh, God, thank God they've said it now. The nation's been holding its breath. But we have... Yuvraj, welcome back, sir. He could play. He could be a Thorlin Petersen's side if he does, because he seems to get him out.
He's another one of those players that I don't think they would have called up into the squad if they weren't going to play him. They would have probably picked Rayner. I feel bad for Rayner, actually. You know, he captained India A, didn't do anything wrong. But Yuvraj, how'd you resist it? Five wickets. Did he get a century? I think he got a 50.
I think you got a 50. Take a look at that stat.
Yeah.
I'll just say this. Yeah, India are a great batting team and they bowl well, I think, in their own conditions. Like you said, I can see England winning it. Certainly not out of the question that they'll win that series, maybe, you know, maybe 2-0 or something like that. But the thing is that they're no mugs, India, by any means, and we are bottlers. So it would seem like mighty hubris to predict anything other than to predict to win. I have a sneaking suspicion we might get a bit of our mojo back that we've pretty much kept going in the test arena, even though it slowed down a little bit post South Africa. I think post South Africa we might bounce back basically, but I just feel ridiculous saying it because you know I was quite positive about England's chances in the T20 and we know how that turned out.
To summarise, then Ross has said England are going to win the series. Thanks. I think someone just said cricket.
It screams cricket.
But using music. Right, final feature of today. Yeah, yeah, sounds of Parliament. Yeah, yeah. Cricketing politicians.
Oh, very good.
This is a subject I've been wanting to do since the very first episode. But these are the long winter evenings, which are about to just fly by.
Oh.
And I'm going to talk about... Don't groan like that.
Sorry.
We've had words. Okay, so we've got Lord Coe, ex-MP, does very well with the Olympics. And
I thought you'd say the ladies, then.
Yeah, the ladies...
Maybe it does. Oh, do you know what I hate? When Seb Coe put his glasses on in the Olympics.
I don't remember all that.
He'd come up, no glasses on, then he'd get a speech out, then he'd go, And then the world would wait for him to put his slightly silly sort of Dean Cain Superman glasses on.
I think it was a real missed opportunity on Lord Coe's part to begin the speech to the whole world. Unaccustomed as I am to public speaking.
Yeah, that would be, that would be a real
real missed opportunity.
It's always a great way to
Let's
start.
Let's talk about some cricketing politicians, because cricket's a powerful thing. Maybe not so much in England, but definitely elsewhere. I want to begin with one who's been in the news recently, Imran Khan. You know him, Ross?
Personally, no.
No, okay. Head of the Pakistani Movement for Justice Party.
Yeah. Tell me.
Let me tell you a story about Imran Khan. He announced on Twitter a few days ago that he was detained and interviewed by US officials when flying to New York. And he was detained and interviewed about his view on drones, because Imran Khan famously opposes the use of unmanned drones. And apparently, Ross, he was interviewed for 2 hours about his view on drones. I've thought about this a little bit, and my conclusion is there's absolutely no way they spoke to him for 2 hours about drones. Let's think about drones for a second.
Hang on, Alex, what are drones?
Drones are unmanned aircraft that drop bombs on people. Well, I'll tell you what they are. It's a very quick conversation. Drones have been used to take out the Al-Qaeda leadership. They spare troops on the ground, and they target things surgically, winning the war. They're an indiscriminate robotic killing machine used by a rogue nation with no respect for the sovereignty of others. By the time you've got through all of that, 15 minutes to me.
Yeah.
15 minutes max.
You did it in 15 seconds.
15 seconds. Next hour and 45 minutes, I would say Imran Khan, they were probably like, what was it like to win the 92 World Cup, Imran?
It was great. And then he, with his smooth, dulcet tones and his command of the audience, he just would have wowed them and got a little bit sexy.
He was there with the Americans, and they're like, how good was that 1980s West Indies side? How'd you rate him?
Oh, that would have been brilliant. That's right. They were just, oh, yeah, we were talking about the drones. And they were going, Imran, what was it like when you played Test cricket?
Yeah. How did you strategise Pakistan's first series win in England in 1987?
Imran, read us a poem.
Yeah, so absolute lies. There's no way they were talking to him about drones. But Imran, maybe the most high-profile cricketing politician.
Lovely voice.
Lovely voice. He's a very serious man.
He is quite a serious man, and I like that. I think that's why I think he's sort of the Robert Redford of cricket.
It makes me want to move on to something maybe who's slightly less serious. Mm. There's a rich tradition of Sri Lankan cricketing politicians. Hashan Tilakaratne, former captain Ranatunga, and all three of them are World Cup winners. This World Cup winner from 1996, Sanath Jayasuriya, who has since 2010 been Member of Parliament for the Mataara district.
Wow.
Okay. Now, that's in the ruling party, United People's Freedom Alliance. Slight thing about Jayasuriya, I'm not entirely sure how much time he's giving over to politics at the moment. He's still playing regularly. You go on Crick Info, he even played on the 20th and 21st of October 2020 against a Pakistan World 11. And he played the Sri Lankan Premier League this year.
Yep.
And he also has had a spot on Indian reality TV. Jalak Dikla Jar, which is a bit like Strictly Come Dancing.
Is it?
Yeah, and he's been appearing on that. He quotes said, "People in my country are happy for me. They aren't affected by MPs starring in TV shows."
they're not negatively affected, one would hope.
He also has a pharmaceutical business and is available for films.
Is that what they said? Yeah. Available for films?
Yeah, on his website. Available for films. So I'm not sure how much politicking he's doing on Jayasuriya.
They all are, I've got a feeling there hasn't really been a cricket film star, has there? Not. Oh, actually, there is that guy, isn't there? There's a guy that used to play with Tendulkar and was known as one of the other great batsmen. Is it Cambly? No,
Vinod Cambly. Oh,
I think
we're about to come on to him.
I might have suggested someone else as a movie star. Anyway, go on.
Well, this brings us to the rich tapestry of Indian politics, and this all comes from Sachin Tendulkar, another World Cup winner, which probably explains why there are no English cricketing politicians. And he joins a series of other Indian players who have been politicians. Ex-Indian captain Mohammad Azharuddin is a member of the ruling Indian Congress Party, and he was helped on his campaign trail by Kapil Dev when he was campaigning. More success for Tendulkar's childhood friend Vinod Cambly, who, despite two double test centuries, lost a battle to be elected on a certain ticket for the Lok Bharati Party. I think I pronounced that wrong. But let's finish up with a word also for Navjot Singh Sidhu, a dashing Indian opener elected to the Indian Parliament, but unfortunately for him, then convicted of culpable homicide.
Ooh, how? What, do you know what the details were?
It doesn't matter because the Supreme Court stayed the conviction and he's back and he's been elected again, everyone.
Oh,
he's been elected again.
That's nice.
That's reassuring.
What's a homicide between friends?
Yeah.
Listen.
I like culpable homicide as opposed to...
Actual.
Culpable. I'm not culpable. Homicide. How can you... Well, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not, wasn't that culpable.
Well, my fault, man.
No.
Well, my fault.
Leave it there, Cuff.
That's how Cambly talks.
Is it?
Yeah, he was a fishmonger.
He sounds a bit like he's from a secret South London location, like a, sounds like some sort of South London gangster.
Yeah, away from Asia, Sir Frank Worrell, one of the three West Indian Ws, appointed to the Jamaican Senate and a supporter of closer political union between the people of the Caribbean, which makes sense, being that he was in a West Indies side, which is in itself a closer union between the people of the Caribbean. Not, in this case, a World Cup winner. But his excuse is there was no World Cup. So he got that in early, didn't he?
Yeah.
Quiz, then, for the listener. Champagne the prize. In total, how many World Cup winning cricketers in ODIs have also been politicians?
So wow, that's a great quiz question. You're going to get them some champagne.
Champagne for the winner. Tweet it to us.
Tweet it to us.
At cricketpodblast or thecricketpodblast at gmail.com.
Ah, what an offer. Well, that was a superb history of politicians in cricket, Alex. Well done.
Thanks very much. I hope you enjoyed it.
I really did. It sort of felt like it might be going a little political there, but it didn't really. If you think it did, don't worry, it didn't. We don't want to alienate anyone.
It veered off into the world of the slightly absurd, I think.
Yeah, well, it was wonderful. And by the way, have you seen Vaughnie on Strictly Come Dancing?
I haven't.
He's very good. He's getting better all the time.
It's all part of the wonderful tapestry of cricket, isn't it, Ross?
Everyone will see you next week for some cricket poetry, maybe. Well, 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 we've come to the end of another show, and what a great show it was, Alex.
It has, and it's really flown by, because there was so much else that we wanted to talk about.
Well, we're going to review Mike Lafton's character, in fact. We're going to reappraise the man himself next week.
Through the lens of his book, Glorious Summers of Discontents. Of Discontents.
And Discontents.
And Discontents. The summer of discontent.
Well, next week there'll be a boycott exclusive. We'll also talk about the
listeners
Champions
will be
League
boycotting us.
Let's hope not. We'll also look at the Champions League, and maybe we'll.
Do we have to look at the Champions League?
Yeah,
do we
really?
Bastard son of cricket,
Edward Bastard. Yes, let's do that, and maybe we'll do some cricket poetry.